This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. It is the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. No Skybet Championship to look back on with the international break, but elsewhere, records have been broken in the EFL. In Skybet League One, MK Dons celebrated their fourth consecutive win by announcing that in their defeat at Gillingham earlier in March, they'd set a British record for consecutive passes leading to a goal. I'm not sure who keeps a record of these things, but thanks for sharing. And in Skybet League Two, Cambridge United returned to the top and Paul Mullen broke their club record for league goals in a season. And as a result, we'll have a stand named after him until the end of this campaign. It's the official EFL podcast. I haven't actually officially checked this out, but if you are talking about breaking or setting records, I would imagine that our first guest on this week's official EFL podcast could be about to achieve something quite unique. There cannot be too many managers who have won three promotions from the same division with the same club over three separate spells. But that's what could await Darren Ferguson with Peterborough United in 9 or 12 games time. And I know, Darren, it's four career managerial promotions in your 14 years as a manager. I'm guessing right now is when your previous experience really starts to count because you've been there before.
Well, you hope so. You always look back at past successes and also failures, actually, for that matter. And also when you get to this part of the business end, Easter time, you've got to stay calm, very confident, composed, and make sure the players can see that. And then hopefully you've got enough.
Does that mean that with some, you're sort of giving them the bull up, but with others, whatever you're feeling inside, you've got to bluff it out and almost kind of fake it out in front of them, even if you're thinking, oh, blimey, we're nearly there, and you're getting quite either excited or nervous or whatever inside?
Yeah, you do. I mean, you need a lot of different faces as a manager, but after we lost to Blackpool, it was a bad performance and bad result last Tuesday. We had a really good meeting on a Thursday morning with the players. And what we said was, we're going to take all the criticism out. There's not going to be any more criticism. Well, not that we were criticising each other massively, but we just said, we're going to encourage from now on till the end and see if that's going to help us get over the line. And then we get a performance like we did on Saturday. But Thursday morning was a big day for us in terms of the plan we set out moving forward.
I mean, when you say that, because obviously, I mean, it was, wasn't it? I mean, dream performance. By the way, I was noticing a previous encounter between you and John Coleman's Accrington Stanley where you won 8-2. So he must absolutely love you and come into your place. You literally laid down, dissected and said, there's 10 games to go as it stood at the time. You really did have one of those proper get it out in the open, this is where we are sort of meetings with the boys.
Yeah, it was. I spoke to three of the senior players first, and then had a couple of individual chats with the players after Tuesday night. And then, but as a group, we just, you know, I laid out the plans first to my staff and then to the players. And it was really simple. Look, because we'd played it Tuesday night in Blackpool, deservedly had lost. Some players getting a bit uptight in terms of the way they were playing. Myself, I got booked in the game, moaning at the referee. So I thought, do you know what? It's not going to look great that from the outside. We need to just calm the whole thing down a bit. And that's what we did on Thursday morning. And just said, look, we're in a great position. If we can we enjoy it? And Saturday, certainly we did enjoy it. I mean, if ever you could script a game, Clem, that was the one, because it was incredible, the result and performance at this stage of the season.
Yeah, well, I know you called it a four-pointer. Sorry, I'm laughing because at the point you're telling me you got booked during a game, I can hear the perfect bird song tweeting in the background, and the two worlds just don't fit, mate. What are they? Can you see them?
No, I can't see them. I can hear them. It sounds lovely, but
beautiful, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's nice. Nice in the morning as well, actually.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and I guess as well, you need that little bit of occasional relief in the middle of the thickness and the fastness of these games. So you do need to step away from it and just experience something completely without football, just for half an hour, just to clear your head.
Absolutely. That is so important, to get a bit of freshness in, a little bit of rest. Your mind doesn't stop thinking, but, you know, just to refresh, because especially this season, I mean, it's been, in terms of, it's just been relentless. We've just finished. This is the first Tuesday we haven't played in 11. You know, wow. that's incredible. And so this week's come just at the right time. You know, we've maybe get a bit of freshness into the players, get a bit of work into them, because in terms of it's just been playing, recovering, we can actually get a bit of work into them tomorrow in terms of maybe positional stuff and what have you. But it's really important to get your rest, and I say that to the players, get good sleep and make sure they're fresh. There's a good chance on Friday I'll have my whole squad fit, bar one player. So I have to say I'm delighted with that at this stage of the season.
Yeah. I mean, maybe people can't quite appreciate the sheer pressure of those two games coming in every 3-4 days. But I should imagine that there's so much overlap. There's the physical side of things. There's the travelling side of things. But the mental fatigue of not really being able to process one game before you're starting to plan the next, that must nibble you in the end, doesn't it?
It depends. I mean, the thing is, we knew what was coming. I mean, it's hard because you're not going to have another season like this. We know normally there's a lot of, especially in our league, in the Championship, there's a lot of Saturday, Tuesday, nothing like this season. So you go all the way back to pre-season and how we prepared it then, you know, in terms of what we had to be ready to do. Players mentally have to be, it's a different sort of challenge. And you can see that the season is coming towards the end. And I always feel that this bit you've got to enjoy, you know, especially in the position we're in. To get that over to the players is, you know, for them to do it is harder, because I can understand they're tense and all the rest of it, but Saturday was the most timely performance in terms of actually the players playing with a smile on their face and obviously getting that result.
Yeah, proper four-pointer with the making up of goal difference and things. There was this phrase that your owner put about the start of the season, Operation Vengeance, because he wasn't happy about the way last season was concluded, you know, average points per game and you missed out on the playoffs and stuff like that. I mean, was that a sort of one-off, or has that been a theme you have used and a tag you have used to drive everybody at the club over the course of the season?
Yeah, it's been mentioned maybe once or twice, but nothing too much. I know, I totally understand why the chairman said it. You know, we were frustrated last season when COVID stopped the league and, well, the decision was made. We didn't agree with it. So, again, credit to my players, because what I have said to my players quite a few times is that actually this has been two seasons, not one. This has gone over 20-odd months to try and get to where we are. We don't want to waste it now. I speak a lot about what stadiums they want to play in, Clem. You know, they want to play at Derby, they don't want to play at, no disrespect, Rochdale. These are the motivational things that you need to get into them, because also you're going to have crowds back next season when we start. Again, it could be 2,000, could be 30,000. It's all there for us. You know, there's no need to say any more to them. That's got to be the motivation for everyone.
You seem very calm yourself. I know you've had a day off as we speak to you. There is something about you in that football club, isn't there? Just whatever has gone on at certain times, however your relationship is day to day and all the rest of it, the association just seems to fit you like a glove, unless there's something going on I don't know about.
Yeah, we've got a good relationship. And the most important one, I've always said this, is a manager and a chairman. We've got other owners now who, when I came back the third time, I'd obviously never met and had no relationship with. So I had to build a relationship with them. And they've been excellent, very, very supportive. Obviously, Dara's been here since I've first came into the club. And we've got a very good relationship. And it's very honest, you know. And you know what? I couldn't possibly forward any of the text messages that he sends me when we lose games or things like that. But like 14 years ago, I would have been coming back at him. But now I just, you know, he's just passionate. He wants to win. I get on great with him. You know, on Tuesday night coming home from Blackpool, it's a long journey. He's angry, you know, and I had to calm him down and say, look, you need to just calm down. We'll be fine. We'll be all right. You know, you have to sometimes reassure him. He does it with me. So it's a good relationship. It works. We've had success in the past. We want success again. You know, given everything that's going on in the world, economically, financially, this, you know, would be a hell of a season to get promoted because of the rewards for that alone, you know.
There's various bits and pieces of all sorts of subjects I want to discuss with you. One of which is your own personal COVID management, because you have been seen quite frequently wearing the mask during the games. I know you've got your own personal safety at heart and things. How challenging is that? I mean, I see it hanging off your ears sometimes, and other times you kind of put it across. I mean, you expend a lot of energy and there's a lot of talking during a game. That little bit must be quite tiring, isn't it?
Well, everyone makes their own decision on how they deal with the pandemic. And, you know, when the second one hit, you could see the numbers. And I generally wanted to respect the fact that this thing was killing lots of people.
Yeah.
I also had to respect the fact that if I got it, you know, I mean, poor Steve Cotterill, he's got it really bad. He's been in and out of hospital. I'm not saying if I'd have got it, it would have been like that. But if I'd have got it, I would have been a period of time the club would have been without a manager.
Yeah.
So I had to consider that as well. I had to consider myself, my own health and my family's. These are all things I did think about. And you know, I decided that I wanted to just watch the game from more of a distance, wear a mask, you know, and try and be a bit safer that way, you know. And it has been a challenge, you know, it has been a challenge. For example, my chairman didn't really agree. He thought I should have been down the touchline. But, you know, with the set of players I've got, interestingly enough, Tuesday's probably the most animated I've been and the most I've probably been on the touchline. And I just felt driving home, do you know what? They're not players that deal with that sort of me being animated on the touchline. They're far better with me being a lot calmer, in which I have been most of the season. So I felt it makes sense, but it's mainly to respect and try and get the numbers down, Clem, for no other reason, really.
Yeah, no, and listen, I think it's refreshing because I think, you know, there's that bravado and sort of machismo about football, isn't there? And we've seen the scene still on the pitch and things like that. But I think it's a positive signal that a high-profile football manager sort of puts personal safety and puts that level of respect first. And that's the reason that I sort of brought the question up. The other word I have to say to you is pitch. And I have texted you a couple of times over the course of the last few months now. Tread very carefully because I don't want you to fall out with everybody who's doing the best they can in difficult circumstances. Mate, at one stage, I don't know how you even walked on it, let alone won a game of football. I mean, it looks awful.
It is. So the problem we had over Christmas was there was a burst pipe underneath. I mean, they're very old. It's an old stadium.
Right.
And you're talking, this pipe was about 80 years old, you know? So the weather was bad. It was raining, but we just couldn't get the water off the pitch. So obviously no one was aware for 3 weeks of this burst pipe underneath the pitch. So it's completely ruined it. It destroyed the pitch. We're trying to get it back a little bit. But the problem we've got during the winter months, because it was wet, we were okay with it. Now it's a problem because now it's starting to get dry and there's more sunshine and the weather's changed. It's making it worse because we were all right with it wet, but it's drying out a little bit. In the last couple of games, Portsmouth in particular at home, was Saturday it played okay, but it is a mess. But you know what? We're winning on it. It's not affected us, you know, and I'm not going to use it as an excuse. We're winning on it. It's not good. It's not good for the way we want to play, but we're winning on it, so we seem to be coping okay with it.
Yeah, quite. I think that was the question I was about to ask you, was have you had to compromise a little bit in terms of style and how you like to play, etc. But hey, you're at the season as well where any port in a storm, just get the wins and get yourselves over
exactly.
the line, aren't you?
Exactly.
You do refresh on a regular basis, particularly in the centre-forward position. We were fortunate enough to have Ivan Toney on the Official EFL podcast last week. Just lovely, lovely fella, and you must be absolutely delighted for him. I mean, we're all fascinated by the conveyor belt, that as one goes out, you always seem to have one waiting to come in. I don't know what it's like behind the scenes, do you? I mean, has Barry Fry and everybody else literally got them lined up? Do you know who's coming in when one's going out, or is it sometimes much more panicky than it appears?
No, we're prepared. We really are. You know, we knew Clark Harris was coming in. It was just a case of getting the deal done. We knew as soon as Ivan had gone, we would get Clark Harris. We felt we obviously had previous January where Ivan, there was some bids in, but to be fair to Ivan, his attitude was outstanding. He only came to see me once about it over the whole of the January period. I think he understood that he wanted to help us get promoted and then get his move. No surprise, he's done so well. Great lad, quality player. So we knew, but Clark, I had to get someone in with the physicality And also, Jono's scored goals quite regularly in the Bristol Rovers team in the last two seasons. His record's good. I know the boy. I released him, actually, when he was 17. He was a kid at Peterborough. But he's a totally different person now. He's got, you know, he's matured. He's a fantastic lad, Clem. Fantastic lad. Proper bloke. And he's done great. I mean, he's done absolutely fantastic. You know, with nine games to go, I think he's got 25 league goals or 25 goals. If you get the ball in the box to him, put the ball in the box, he's scoring goals.
Yeah, 27 overall, 25 in the league. I mean, in that process, because obviously not all when you were there, but when we look back, him this season, Ivan Lass, obviously Jack Marriott, I think, might have been gone just before you came back.
Yeah, he was.
Britt Asson Belonga in one of the gaps between you being there and things. I mean, it's a hell of a mechanism to have around the club, isn't it? That A, can reap its dividends on the pitch and hopefully get you the results, but B, obviously swell the coffers as well, that keeps the club self-sufficient and moving.
I think we made over 50 million as a club, you know, in terms of players we've sold.
Yeah,
it's over 50 million. You know, it's not just been strikers. We brought Ryan Bennett for 500 grand and sold him for 4 million. You know, we've had so many of them come in, and I think, like, Marriott wasn't here when he was here. Someone else bought him. I can't remember if it was Grant. I can't remember anyway. And then they sold him on. But I think what we've got as a club, certainly the teams I've had, we've always tried to score goals. You know, and players have really liked that. The strikers are the finishers, and we've found a way of bringing them in and selling them on. I mean, the Dwight Gale one still is astonishing. I think we only cost us about 50 grand. We sold them for 6 million within 5 months. It was an astonishing deal, that one. And probably the best one we've had. So, yeah, we keep finding a way. And, you know, Barry, there's no one better than Barry at getting deals done.
Does he share them with you, Dad? Does he like come to you and go, I'll tell you what, mate, 6 months' time, if we need him, I've got this one? Or does he spring them a bit later when he's got them a bit further? I mean, what stage do you get involved in sort of listening to his enthusiasm and passion for them?
Well, with the Ivan one, I didn't get too heavily involved. The three owners decide the price. So right. I don't get overly involved in that. The best one was when Dara rang me up. I was in my house. And we sold Dwight Gale. And he phoned me up and he just went, I've sold Dwight Gale. And my phone went dead, Clem. He thought I could just put the phone down on him. he said, you just put the phone down on me. I went, no, it just something went wrong. He went, don't worry, I've sold him, but I've just put a bid in for Asson Belonga, so we're going to be signing him this week. So it's like, okay, I can't really argue with the guy. You know, I'm fortunate. I'm very fortunate that... We make so much money out of players, but he does put it back in. He does put it back in. Not all owners and chairmen do. And the other two owners are just as ambitious, you know. There's a lot going on with the football club. New stadium, a lot of money put into the youth. We're going Category 2 next season in the academy. So there's a lot of positive stuff going on with the club, you know.
Fixtures this coming weekend are Good Friday, Hull at Crewe, Darren's Peterborough at Fleetwood, as he's mentioned, to Lincoln at home to MK Dons have won their last four, Portsmouth against Rochdale, Sunderland, Oxford, Blackpool and beaten in their last 11, travel to Swindon. And then on Easter Monday, Blackpool at home to Gillingham, Hull at home to Northampton, Portsmouth visit Wigan, Tuesday night, Lincoln visit Charlton. You'll note, Darren, that I have missed one obvious one on Easter Monday afternoon. You entertain Sunderland. Well, listen, you're going to have games. You're going to have the sort of ones you'll be expected to get over the line. And I guess with this amount of fixtures still to go, you're going to have the big tussles as well. It's all part of the mix, is it?
It's all part of the mix. I mean, it really is an attitude. I know it's a cliche, but it's worked for us. Just take each game as it comes. Don't overthink things. We got a tough Easter, you know. We got Fleetwood away. It's always tough. Doesn't matter where they are in the league or where you are. It's always a tough place to go. They're on a good run with Simon Gunning, who's done very well. So I think for me, that's as a manager, when you prepare for games, it's probably a harder one to prepare for. But Sunderland's an easy one for me. You know, Sunderland at home, I don't have to do much. It takes care of itself, that game. That doesn't concern me at all. That just is one to go out and enjoy, and you know. It would have been great if there was fans, obviously, but the Sunderland one takes care of itself, Clem. There's not too much to do for that.
Are you a sort of analyzer? Do you get the table on a regular basis? Do you look at you know, what the points difference is? Who's still got games on who? Are you one of those kind of people? Or are you a kind of take care of our own business and let the rest take care of theirs?
Just take care of our own.
Right.
Just take care of your own. Because you, at this stage of the season, you get everyone saying, well, a lot of people saying, well, they might need this amount of points or you might need this amount of wins. No one knows. You know, no one knows. We, you know, all you know is what's in front of you and you've got to take care of it. You know, you win your two games over Easter, it puts you in a great position. If you lose them, you're not out of it. It's nothing's decided over Easter. I think, Claire, I'm being honest, I think this will go all the way. I think it'll go right to the end.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you know who you play last game of the season? I haven't looked it up. Do you know who you play last game of the season?
Our last three games are Doncaster at home, Lincoln at home, and Doncaster away. That's our last three games.
I've gone quiet. What's that anomaly then where you play Donny two out of the last three games? Was that some postponed game earlier in the season?
Yeah, it was Christmas. We had the COVID situation, so we got it off. So we've put it in the last week. So we've got Donny twice in the last three games, Lincoln. We've got Charlton as well. We got. I mean, people look at it and think that's a really tough game. I think they're great games. I really do.
I love the stories that football chucks up. You know, the man who restored Doncaster to League One is trying to bring them down and take six of their last potential 9 points from them. You couldn't script it. Are you sure you can't tell us what those birds are? I'm no expert. You just can't see them.
Idea.
They're just chirping away, are they?
They're somewhere, obviously, but I don't know. I'm no expert on birds. I've got to be honest. They sound nice, though.
They sound absolutely beautiful. As do you. It's lovely to hear you sounding so relaxed and chipper. We wish you luck for the rest of the season. Thanks for joining us.
Take care. Thanks, Clem. All the best. Cheers.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Of all this weekend's Easter fixtures, one in particular stands out. It's in Sky Bet League 2. It's on Easter Monday when Harrogate Town entertain Port Vale and when history will be made in English football as Rebecca Welsh becomes the first female appointment as a referee in the EFL. How are you feeling, Rebecca?
Yeah, that's some introduction. Probably the best one I've had all day. So, yeah, thanks for that. Still on the ceiling, I think. It's been a long all day, but had a lot of people congratulating us. So, yeah, I'm just trying to digest it all and take it all in and let it sink in, really.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you've obviously got the appointment just on the sort of interview side of things. Referees don't do an awful lot, particularly during a season. Has there been a sort of conscious decision from PGMO and Mike Jones, who helped with the appointment and things, who runs the sort of referees in the EFL, get all the media stuff done and then you can concentrate on the game itself? Has that been the plan?
Yeah, I think so. I think they knew there was going to be a lot of attention around it, you know, for all the right reasons, I guess. But yeah, it was obviously the game's next Monday, so get the media out the way, let it calm down, and then it gives me enough days to prepare for any game as I would. So yeah, I think that was kind of the plan. So hopefully in the next couple of days, everything will calm down and then just get myself prepared and right for Monday, really.
Has it been on the horizon for quite a while? I mean, maybe not a direct appointment, but has it been talked about, look, we're thinking of doing this, you know, you're top of the sort of FA rankings in the women's game, etc. Did you know it was going to come sooner rather than later?
Do you know what? Hand on heart, honestly, no. So I knew, obviously I've been performing quite well, otherwise I wouldn't have had this opportunity. So we get graded on every game, so you've got to be at near the top of the merit list to be given these opportunities. So yeah, literally it was a phone call on Saturday, and when the phone call came in, I thought straight away, I was on my way back from a game, oh my God, what have I done? That was the initial thought. But yeah, when Mike said, we want to give you a development game, then I just couldn't believe it. So no, apart from Saturday, I didn't have any clue that it was going to happen. So yeah, it was a good phone call to receive.
Here's the bit I'm confused about. I always get asked not to compare the men's and women's professional game. Is referee different? Is it essentially the same, regardless of who's playing, Rebecca?
Yeah, I think to a certain extent it is. Like, I prepare exactly the same for the men's game as I do for the women's game. You know, I do my homework on the players, set pieces, how they set up. But yeah, pretty much, I think you go out there and referee two teams, and if you think it's a foul, you give it. And if you don't, you don't. That's basically, you know, it sounds really basic, but that's what refereeing is about. Obviously, you've got different characters in the male game to the women's game. And I think you probably adapt slightly depending on who them characters are. And, you know, what their personalities are, but I guess that's just how people do in life, really. So refereeing's no different. But the prep up to it and in the game, it's exactly the same.
And do you think, or have you had, do you think you will have any additional sort of help in making that switch in terms of the scrutiny, in terms of whether players try and take advantage of you and use the situation? Mind you, they'd be darn stupid if they didn't watch their P's and Q's and realise the kind of microscope you're going to be under. I'm not trying to frighten you here, by the way, but you know what I'm saying.
No, I think it's a good point. And I think, you know, I'm lucky enough that I've refed at Harrogate before when they were in the National League North. So a few seasons ago now, but yeah, I've refed there before. So, and listen, when I go to any game, whether it's a, you know, an under 15s game, whether it's a ladies game or whether it's a male game, I just ref it exactly the same way as I would any other game. You know, I don't give any game any heightened of respect. I give them all the same respect. And I think, you know, as referees, that's what we should do.
Yeah, it's not Harrogate Town. It's not Simon Weaver I'm worried about. But I've had a couple of nights with Daryl Clark. Oof, dear me. Baptism of fire or what? No, I'm joking with you. I'm teasing you. I mean, are you nervous?
I'm nervous for every single game I go into. Like, I never go out like really, really calm and relaxed. There's always that element of nerves. And I always think that's because I care about what I do. So I want to go out and I want to get everything right. I think that's where that nerves comes from. And I think that's quite good. You know, I think probably footballers feel the same when they walk out, they feel a little bit nervous. So I think it's good for me to feel like that, because if I don't feel like that, I think, oh my God, what's wrong? So yeah, like definitely I'll be nervous on the day. But I was nervous last Saturday when I refereed at Kings Lynn, and, you know, nervous when I went to Tottenham Hotspur in the Women's League the Sunday before. So it's an element of my game, you know, walking out. As soon as the whistle goes, the go. Do you know what I mean? And we just referee the game, so.
Is the jubilation you get out of doing something you're deeply passionate about, it completely just makes up for the pain of that little parrot, the chatterbox on your shoulder the night before, giving you, you know, not making you sleep totally brilliantly, and the butterflies in the stomach and all the different versions of nerves that they are?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like, I used to play football when I was younger, but in all honesty, I would never have made it as a professional. So where else can you get the best seat in the house to watch the action right in front of you, apart from being a referee? So it was a career I kind of fell into without any real ambition of ever wanting to be a referee. And now I wouldn't change it for the world. So I've got the best job in the world. And I think people look and think refereeing cannot be the best job in the world. But unless you do it, I don't really think you understand it.
Yeah, you're a certain breed, aren't you? Would you share with us your sort of the roots of your interest in football and stuff? Where does it go back to? Was it mum and dad taking you to matches? What was the sort of initial seed that set you on your path to where you're going to be next Monday?
Yeah, well, it wasn't really my mum, because my mum, I should say, I don't know why I just called her my mum. Yeah, my mum doesn't really pay much attention to football, but my dad's obviously massive into football. He used to cry when his team used to get relegated back in the day.
Who's his team?
Sunderland.
Okay. Well, he's had a challenge in the last few years, hasn't he? He's had a lot to cope with, but maybe times are coming. Well, it could be a very good weekend, by the way, for the whole family, couldn't it? Anyway, God, please, it's you we're talking about here.
Yeah, so it came from that. My sister was an Irish dancer, very, very good at it as well. And my mum and dad said, "Queer, let's go along and get you started," and I said, "Don't be silly, I'll never be a dancer." So I used to kick a footy about when she used to dance, and it went from there, really. Played at primary school, didn't really play in secondary school, but then picked it up playing for local teams when I was about 18, and it was through doing that at the tender age of 27 that a ref who I know really well had said, after taking a bit of grief off me, is, "Well, if you think you're that good, then go and do the course and try it." And that's literally how it come about. And like, there was no big plan. There was never, ever a big plan, but that's just how it's developed. And I've gotten promotion after promotion and been very fortunate enough to be in the positions I've been in. But, you know, it has took a lot of hard work and a lot of commitment. And now it's a full-time job for me. So I've literally decided 2 years ago to take a career break from work and put everything into it, and let's see how far we can get. So that's the plan.
What was your day job?
I work for the NHS. I went there from after doing my A-levels, decided that I would get a full-time job. So NHS BSA in Newcastle, worked there for 17 years. And I took a career break with, 100% I will return, because if it wasn't for them being as supportive as they have been, there's no way I'd be able to referee at the level I have, because they were absolutely brilliant with me, giving me time off and really understanding. And I think you need that, if you want to ref at the highest levels, you need an employer who's really understanding and supportive. And I certainly had that in them.
Just run us through these levels, because you have accelerated quickly. What? Just take us through the levels and the competitions that have been the kind of feeder to being given this opportunity over the weekend.
So I started out as a level 7, doing local league, so Saturday afternoon, Sunday morning, which I loved, loved. It was definitely shaped us into being a bit more confident, a little bit more cheeky than what I was. So I went from level 7 and done a triple jump and ended up going to level 4, from level 7 to level 4 in one season. So level 4 looks at your supply league, so still very local. Obviously, being in the Northeast, we've got the Northern League, which is obviously I'm biased, but it's a great league. So, and then spent 1 year at level 4, got promoted to level 3. So, and then spent 3 years at level 3, which was probably a really important part of my career, because took a lot of setbacks at level 3, which I needed, because I felt like I'd had such a lot of praise over the first few years that I needed to kind of take stock at a level and, really hear some truths really about how not up to scratch my refereeing was. So spent 3 years at that level and then moved on to 2B, which you're then in the semi-professional part of the game. Spent one season there and then got promoted to National League 3 seasons ago at the professional game. So yeah, that's kind of my story. I've always refereed in the women's league alongside it, but predominantly took the men's route through my promotions.
Who are your role models, Rebecca? Are they male referees? Or obviously we do have some quite high profile women. Stephanie Frappart has just taken charge of an international match, and Bibiana Steinhaus has been on the circuit for quite a while. Or is it a mixture of the two?
I think it's probably a bit of both. You look at Sean, who we've got here, you look at Stephanie, you look at Bibiana, and they've all achieved so much in their careers that I don't think you can not look at them and not think they're role models, because they've paved the way for a lot of, they've paved the way probably even for me to think, do you know what, if they can do it, then so can I. But equally, the guys that, I work with probably more regularly than the girls are absolutely brilliant with me. And, there's a real sense of support from the lads, and we go out every other weekend. And even today, the amount of guys that have texted us to say, well done, congratulations, hope it goes well, is unbelievable. So yeah, probably you need a little bit of both.
Are you completely immersed in the moment from the point of view of enjoying it from your own point of view, or do you feel you are doing your bit as a pioneer for future generations so that you don't have to spend your important downtime talking to the likes of me? You just fit the men's game like a glove, and it's not a novelty.
I think it's always a novelty to go out in the men's game, because I feel so... a lot of people haven't got the opportunity to go out in the leagues I do. So every time I go out, whether any league that is, like, I love going out. I suppose I don't really like seeing myself as a pioneer. I always think, me, like, I'm just a young lass, well, not so young anymore, from Washington. Why would I be seen as a pioneer? But I guess even more so now, it's really important to try and inspire young girls, isn't it? And try and, if they see people in positions that they might want to be in, then does it influence them to go for it? People always say you can't be what you can't see. So if somebody sees me reffing, in the National League or in the Women's Super League and think I want to do that, if by me being there and being visible helps that, then, I'm quite happy to be a pioneer or a role model or trailblazer or whatever you want to call it, because in the future, we want more and more girls to come through and ref, not just in the women's game, but also in the men's game.
What a weekend you've got in prospect. Listen, congratulations on your journey so far. Good luck with the next step. Great to talk to you.
No worries. Thanks very much. Cheers, guys.
This is the official EFL podcast.
So Rebecca Welsh is Sky Bet League 2 standout story of the Easter weekend. If you're looking for the standout story of the season, then what about Morecambe? In the last five campaigns, they haven't finished above 18th, but after their win over leaders Cheltenham Town in their last match, they sit just a point off an automatic promotion place going into the Easter fixtures. Let's speak to manager Derek Adams. And I suppose the question I've got to ask you, Derek, is have you surprised yourself?
No is the answer. I think that when you go into a job and taking it on and assembling the squad that we have done this season, and myself knowing that the players that we had taken in, I always knew that we would have an opportunity of doing well this season. And the players will tell you, we spoke in pre-season training what our aims were for the season, and they were quite high. And to be fair to them, they've rectified that and shown, you know, what a good team they are.
Yeah. I still, and I think I know you well enough to say this, I was a little bit surprised when you took it. I suppose because my association is with Morecambe has been a team that are, well, probably in football's pyramid where they should be according to their resources, i.e. sort of very bottom end of the EFL. Or am I being unfair? Is there some part of this I can't see from the outside?
No, I think you're right. I think that, you know, when I took over at Ross County Football Club, it was my first job as a 32-year-old. It was a tough task. We had to get promoted in the first season, so there was pressure there. Then I went to Plymouth Argyle, and they had to get promoted. So I think that wherever I've been at, there's been pressure, and the pressure in this job was to keep Morecambe Football Club in the Football League. When I joined in November the 11th, they were bottom of the Football League. And we eventually were able to keep them in the league 10 points ahead of the two teams at the bottom of the league. And that meant that we had the momentum going into the new season.
Okay, so do you immediately then move the goalposts yourself, regardless of what fan expectations might be, regardless of what owners might be suggesting? You think, right, we've got to keep this going. There's no reason to not kick it in the direction of the top rather than trying to hold the line again.
Yeah, I mean, I think in leadership and management, it's very important that you analyse what you've got in front of you. You analyse the playing squad. And you block out the surroundings. And I've been very good at that mostly throughout my managerial career, that noise can be a problem. But when you allow noise to become a problem, that's when you have problem in coaching, management, leadership. And you have to be a strong character to deal with that. And I think that then you focus on your team. And whatever's going in and around about the football club or other people are talking about, you've got to understand the movement on your team, how they're going to play, the system of play they're going to play. And that can change. You know, we've used various formations this season. You know, we've gone 3-5-2, we've gone 3-4-3, we've gone a diamond, we've gone four at the back. So we coach the players to be versatile. And to succeed as a person, as a player, you have to be able to do that.
So to that end, I went to see Ian Evatt for BBC One's Football Focus a couple of weeks ago, and he said to me he thought during the early part of the season when, you know, he changed every one of his players, they benefited from not having a crowd in because they're on a bad initial run of form, actually just when you were right in the upper echelons. And you know, if the crowd had been in, they'd have been giving them pelters and all the rest of it. Do you think you might have benefited a little bit just in terms of laying the foundations that you wanted and continuing to get the club moving in the direction you want?
I think that it has benefited, you know, sub clubs in some way that there's not been supporters in, because there is moments in games where managers get under pressure and they'll make changes because of the crowd. It takes a brave manager and one that is stubborn, so to speak, and to then focus on what he wants from the team. But there are some managers that can get influenced by the crowd, and you know, they have to change personnel. And you know the old saying, why do you not play two up front?
Yeah, mate, you shouldn't have put this on the record. We're going to have every fan in the country now thinking if they don't like team selection, all they've got to do is bombard their manager to get him to make the changes. Do you think the club was ripe for a revamp? I mean, obviously, Jim Bentley was the longest serving manager in the whole of the top four divisions for 18 months before he went off to Fylde. Do you think the club did need, I'm not trying to be unkind to Jim here, but do you think time was right for a big sort of change to look at things from a slightly different perspective? You can stay around a club too long and it becomes entrenched, and sometimes a fresh broom sends it in another direction.
Listen, I've got no idea if it was needed or not needed. It happened. Jim had done a magnificent job to keep Morecambe Football Club in the league for so many years, and then, you know, he got an opportunity to move to Fylde. From my point of view, going into a football club, I tend to go in with a blank canvas. Yes, I do, you know, look at times to what has happened in the past, the system of play that's happened. I did that with Plymouth Argyle. Plymouth Argyle played 3-5-2 with John Sheridan. The supporters didn't want 3-5-2 anymore. They wanted to play with wingers, so we went and played 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1 and, you know, brought the excitement that way. Then I leave and then they want to go back to 3-5-2. It's so, as management and coaching, it's ever-changing. And getting back to your point, I think change at times does help a football club. I think that we all see managers changing at football clubs all the time. You usually see first team coaches, heads of youth, heads of recruitment, kit men, other people, they're always there. That's not always a good thing for the football club, because unless you're doing it particularly well, then you need to change the ethos throughout the football club to make it better and add on layers all the time. And that's what, you know, I think needs to happen, you know, throughout change at different football clubs.
Yeah, I'm loving this. I'm just imagining one or two kit men or assistant managers or heads of academy sort of playing the official EFL podcast or something in the communal office. The manager's walked in and we've got to this point and they're all running, clicking the buttons to knock it off.
The point is that when a manager's doing badly, it's the manager's fault. When the manager's doing well, it's everyone's doing well.
That's a good point, actually. It is a really good point. And every single person, I'm guessing, Derek, and you're far more experienced in this than me, every single person has an effect on the culture of a football club, don't they? And the general feel around the place.
Well, you see these photos, you know, when a manager gets manager of the month, it's about 20 staff that's with them, isn't it? When a manager gets sacked, it's a manager that's going out with his bags himself.
It's a very, very interesting point. Listen, it was an interesting introduction because you only got about 3-4 months, didn't you? And then obviously we had the whole COVID thing. Did that enable you, or did that, you know, because you could then really get to grips with the club during that enforced period, or was it something of a complete frustration because you just couldn't get to meet people face to face and properly, you know, get to grips with things?
I found it a very difficult period. I thought that, you know, when we went into lockdown, we were obviously 10 points ahead at that moment in time, but we still had 9 games to play in the league campaign. And at that moment in time, I was all for it being null and void. I thought that the every league should just be null and void and we start again. But the voting process went ahead and the conclusion was that it wasn't a points per game basis. That didn't affect us, but from a player point of view, you had players coming out of contract and that was difficult. And then trying to sign new players for the new season wasn't easy. And I think we did well to, you know, to get through that period as well as we have done.
You're doing brilliantly well. You've been able to celebrate. I was up and with you last week because I want to talk about one of your players who I think is one of the great sort of stories of the season. I did notice you'd Scottishised the office. Untypical way your assistant manager, John McMahon, did point out you did have a little fire on in there, Derek. I mean, that's not, you know, that I was a little bit shocked.
Well, it can be quite cold in an office without heating. So I've had to buy a small electric heater for the office. But I've got to say, my office is a lot better than the office I had at Plymouth Argyle, which was a porter cabin for a season, but or maybe five seasons. But from that point of view, I did have a Tunnocks chamomile waivers that you enjoyed.
I did enjoy them, indeed, yes. And not one, but I managed to get two out of you, which was much appreciated. Now, listen, I want to talk about Carlos Mendes Gomez. I mean, we told this story on Football Focus last weekend. Oh, it's just one of those wonderful stories of resilience and fighting all the way. Born in Senegal, trip with his dad to Lanzarote for his dance work, then went off to the Atletico Madrid Academy, sort of knocked on doors to try and find himself a club, then moved with his dad and started playing non-league in Manchester, picked up by your scouts, playing for a Manchester college, and here he is, top scorer so far this season. How much do you share stories like that with the rest of the squad? How much do you use storytelling as an example to inspire others around him and you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important. And I think that the important thing is, you know, understanding Carlos's upbringing. And he had to, you know, work hard. He went on his own to try and get a trials at football club, as a lot of young kids do. And then eventually he came over to the UK because his father got a job across here, and he was at Manchester College, and he trained with one of our coaches, Darren Finch, there, and then he took him into the football club and eventually getting a pro contract. And the thing about him is that he wants to learn and he wants to do well and he wants to play at the highest level possible. And this season, you know, he's played in a position which helps him. He finds space. He's created a lot of assists this season, but only that, he's added goal scoring to his game as well. He's a fantastic boy. He trains well every day. He's always got a laugh on his face. And, you know, one of the players that really looks after him is Tumani Diadagara, who I took in from my time at Plymouth Argyle. And he's a great influence for him, because Toombs has been at Brentford in the championships. He's been at Leeds United. And the bond that they've got really helps him. And I think that that'll help him as he progresses up the scale.
You saw him and pretty much thrust him in your first game. You spotted you'd got one there that you could really help to go places.
Yeah, I mean, Carlos was already at the football club, but he was playing in the reserves. And I went to a reserve game after training, and I saw this player, and he excited me. And when I see a player that plays in the way that he does, he plays in pockets, he plays with a freedom, and he plays with an excitement. He's the type of player, if I was a supporter, I would go and watch. And as a manager, you can't stand on the sidelines and watch a bland team. You need excitement. As I said before, I've signed the likes of Lemires and Carey, who excited me. You need players in your team that can do that and do things that are off the cuff, different to someone else. And Carlos has got that ability to change a game in that instance. And I think that, you know, he's a wily old character. You know, he's only 22 years of age, but, you know, he's a strong young boy for his age.
Yeah. I really enjoyed meeting him, as I did coming up to see you and enjoying your Tunnocks wafers. Your fixtures on Good Friday then, early kickoff, Bolton, 35 points from the last 39 against Colchester, one league win in 22. Newport travel to Barrow, Forest Green are at Bradford. First v sixth would be Cambridge United against Morecambe, and then second v third, Cheltenham against Tranmere. And then if we move ahead to Easter Monday, it's Colchester against Barrow, a real crucial one at the bottom of the table. Forest Green entertain Salford. Cheltenham travel to Grimsby. Newport against Bolton. Tranmere against Cambridge. And Tuesday night, Derek's Morecambe entertain Southend United. Derek, I mean, 14th season in the EFL for Morecambe. Fourth was their best so far in 2010 and in the playoffs. Is this one of those chances, not of a lifetime clearly, but is this one of the best chances the club is going to have in its recent history to push on to the next division up?
I think it will be. I think that you know, we're in a situation where we want to beat that points total at 73 points by when Sammy McElroy was the manager, not long after they came into the Football League. So we've got to beat that points total to get ourselves in the automatic promotion places. But probably at this moment in time, with nine games to go, we've got Cambridge on Friday. We're actually looking at trying to win the title. And I think that it's something that we're keen to try and do. We're 5 points off Cambridge with a game in hand. We go there, can we win? We win, it's 2 points with a game in hand. It's doable, and that's the focus and the belief that we've got to instill within the squad.
It's no flash in the pan this. You've been up there pretty much all season. All right, you had your blip, but everybody has a blip. You led the way early doors, and there you are still in the mix as we get into this last 9-10 games of the season.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of good teams at the start of the season. Cambridge have been up there for the majority of the season. And, you know, now you've got the likes of Tranmere and Bolton having, you know, really good runs, and you're just having to keep up with the pace. And it's going to be a fascinating, you know, finish to the season. It's going to be tight because it's tight already, and we just have to try and keep on winning games.
Good luck. Great to talk to you. Thanks for sharing those biscuits. If you do win promotion, I won't just replace the 2 Tunnocks wafers. I'll send you 2 packets. How's that? Now, there's an offer you can't refuse. That should get you over the line, Derek, eh?
That should just about push it, yes.
Thanks, Derek. Great to talk to you, mate.
Thank you, Clark.
Just time to mark your card on the key fixtures in the Sky Bet Championship over the coming Easter weekend. 3 o'clock kickoffs on Good Friday. Norwich visit Preston, Watford entertain Sheffield Wednesday. Then at 5:30, it's Barnsley against Reading, so 2 of the top 6 going head-to-head. And 8 o'clock in the evening, Swansea visit Birmingham. Brentford don't play until Saturday lunchtime when they visit Huddersfield. Then Easter Monday, Watford visit Middlesbrough in the early kickoff. 3 o'clock, it's Barnsley at Luton, Reading entertain Derby, Swansea entertain Preston. Then Tuesday night, it is Brentford at home to Birmingham and Norwich at home to Huddersfield. That's it for another episode. A big thank you to Derek Adams and Darren Ferguson, and good luck to Rebecca Welsh. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and share on your socials if you'd like to get in touch. Our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.